You're listening to The Point. Author and journalist Denise Kernan joins us. She's the author of The Girls of Atomic City, the untold story of the women who helped win World War II, which tells the story of the women who worked at Oak Ridge on the Manhattan Project. Denise, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, this was an effort that produced the first nuclear weapons, started in Manhattan, but there were other sites that were utilized, including Oak Ridge, which was referred to as Site X. They were enriching fuel for the first atomic bomb, and none of the women who came to work here knew exactly what they were getting into. In fact, this town was built specifically for this. This was like a really big secret.
It was a very big secret. There were the majority of people in general across the country working on the Manhattan Project, whether women or men, were kept in the dark about the final purpose, the ultimate purpose of the project upon which they were working. Now, of course, those folks at the higher levels of the Manhattan Project, women and men, knew more about what was going on, but the vast majority of people and the ones that I focus on in the book really had little to no idea.
Yeah. And the scale of this site in Oak Ridge was pretty amazing. As I mentioned, this town is created in rural East Tennessee. How was it chosen? And give us an idea of what kind of acreage we're talking about.
The scale is something that I found and still find absolutely remarkable. I'm glad you mentioned that. It's important to understand that Oak Ridge was a purpose-built town. Oak Ridge did not exist before World War II. About 1,000 families were moved off of their land by eminent domain, some given as little as 2 weeks to move out. And then they broke ground and started building what would become the factories and supporting infrastructure and living areas of Oak Ridge. So you think about break ground around the end of 1942. Between then and mid of 1945, this place goes from not existing to being having about 80,000 people living and working there, more commuting in, using more electricity than New York City, and it's not even on a map.
Right.
The fact that, going from 0 to 80,000 in such a short amount of time was just striking to me.
Yeah.
And the site was chosen for a number of different reasons. First of all, they wanted something that was easily accessible by Washington and New York. They didn't want anything that was too close to the coast. They wanted something that was a place that was somewhat hidden. So, the Southern Appalachians, Great Smokies, were helpful in that respect. They needed a huge a lot of electricity. And there had just been a giant dam TVA project put in nearby. And they also needed somewhere, because of this rapid construction project, they needed somewhere they could actually do construction pretty much year round. So a number of these factors came together to land at Oak Ridge's door. But one of my favorite stories, which has probably been a little embellished over the years, is that I do think there is a nugget of truth in it, is that a Senator McKellar from Tennessee was called in by the president saying that, and he was on the Appropriations Committee. Basically, the president was saying, we need to hide, a multi-million dollar project. Any suggestions on how we might be able to do that? And the story goes, Senator McKellar said, absolutely, Mr. President, we can hide a project of that expense. Where in Tennessee would you like to hide it?
Yeah.
I always thought that was, I always thought that was amusing.
I have it open to that page because I thought this was because it had $2 billion for the funding of the city.
It is.
$2 billion.
Yes. And those are 1945
right.
dollars. Yeah, it is. An unbelievably huge undertaking. And when you talk about that money, for those of us who remember hearing about the Truman Committee, You know, there are all these constant sessions going on during the war about where is the money going? How are we allotting funds for various wartime projects? And you know, Truman was one of those people who was always, you know, his committee was asking a lot of questions. Well, when Truman became president, boy, did he suddenly start to understand where the money was going. Mm-hmm. And his papers were just lovely to have when I was writing this. He had a diary entry that essentially said, I felt as though the moon and stars had fell down upon my head or something, yeah. something like that when he found out about this secret project that he knew nothing about until he was president.
Yeah. And you mentioned that some of these folks who had to move pretty quickly, taking their land by eminent domain, or sometimes that this for some of these people, this was the third time they were evicted. They had the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, then the Norris Dam, and then yep. the city of Oak Ridge. And Oak Ridge wasn't on the map until 1949. But what I thought was interesting, you think, why wouldn't there be more of a fight? But and why were all these people coming to this secret location for this secret job? But they were told this was for the war effort. And at that time, mm-hmm. that was a good enough reason for most people to move or come to a secret place for a secret reason.
Exactly. Yeah. And when I was interviewing these people, women and men, some of them had some very strange arrival stories. And especially some of these young women who, you know, were, you know, maybe 17 years old and had lived fairly sheltered lives, pretty much going off into the unknown. And my little 21st century brain was saying, well, why are you doing this? You know, what was going through your mind? And everyone said, you know, I had a brother, I had a friend, I had, you know, a husband, whatever, somebody was away fighting. And the idea that you had the opportunity to do something for the war effort meant everything to these people. And I think unless you lived through World War II, right. it's hard to understand the extent to which everyone felt touched by that war. It was ever mm-hmm. present. Songs on the radio were about the war. Cartoon strips were about the war. There were USO dances. There were scrap metal drives. So the idea of doing your part was a very, very significant one mm-hmm. for these folks. And so if they, you know, a couple people said, yes, I didn't get to know what I was working on, but I did know that it was important to the war effort, and that was enough for me. That was a very common response.
You've got some interesting photos in the book as well. And in fact, it was a photo that inspired you to write the book, right?
Absolutely. The photos, Ed, I'm thrilled that I still know. I just saw him a couple weeks ago. Ed Westcott, who was the official photographer for what was then known as the War Department during World War II in Oak Ridge. Ed has a tremendous eye, and he captured both kind of the work life, personal life, and sort of industrial background of Oak Ridge during the war. And I was working on a different book project. I was working on a project for Smithsonian Museum. And in the course of my research, I was going down one of those internet rabbit holes and came across an old Department of Energy newsletter that had this little history corner in it. And that picture that inspired me, which is a picture of these young women sitting on stools in front of these massive machines, I just looked at it and it caught my eye. And the caption said, these young women, you know, many of them high school graduates from rural areas in Tennessee, are enriching uranium for the world's first atomic bomb. Many of them will not know their role, you know, for years to come. And that just grabbed me. And I got very distracted very quickly, but then had to find out whether or not I was the only person who didn't know if I was asleep in history class on that day. Yeah. And try and find out whether or not that was a story worth hanging on to and whether or not I could track down any of these individuals. And I'm happy to say the answer to both of those questions was yes.
Yeah. And so, as we know, they're told this is secret. They're only told what they need to know. And they're sort mm-hmm. of instructed not to ask questions. And in the photos, I thought this was interesting. You have some shots of some of the billboards. Your pen and tongue can be enemy weapons. Watch, you know, what yes. you say, and then picture the three monkeys, you know, what you see here, what you, you know, do here, what you hear here should stay here, you know.
Yep. Let it stay here. And those kinds of billboards and reminders and pamphlets were throughout Oak Ridge. You know, secrecy was not unusual everywhere during World War II, you know, loose lips sink ships, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. But it was just taken to an extreme level in Oak Ridge and other Manhattan Project sites. And people, you know, there were security briefings, there were random inspections, there were badges and IDs, and yes, you were supposed to not just keep mum about what you were doing, but you were supposed to limit your curiosity right. about what anyone else was doing. And the idea was you couldn't accidentally turn over information to the enemy if you had none to turn over.
Right. Now, for many of these women, this was an incredible opportunity. Men were off fighting. That opened the door for women for some of these jobs that they might not have gotten otherwise. But I'm also thinking this opportunity, we got to remember the time frame of when this is happening in the 40s. I think of Jane, who's one of the people that you highlight.
Yeah.
She wanted to be an engineer, and she was told, nope, sorry, can't do that.
Yep. In fact, Jane, for me, because as you do all of these interviews, at a certain point, as a writer, you can't, if you're doing narrative nonfiction, you can't include everyone, because then it's not a story anymore. It's an encyclopedia, really. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I absolutely wanted to include Jane was, to me, she sort of epitomized how much had changed for women and how much had not changed for women.
Yeah.
So this was a woman who was extremely smart, wanted to register in the School of Engineering, and on registration day was basically taken out of that line. And the reason was, we don't let girls study engineering. She was so upset and furious about that, because she had all the grades and recommendations and everything to back up her her application. She ends up studying statistics instead, and gets a very good job offer from Oak Ridge. Mm-hmm. And she's basically in charge of a room of quote-unquote computers, which back then was a bunch of women and men, you know, with hand-crank calculators.
Yeah.
And, you know, so on the one hand, she was making probably more money than she ever thought she might. She was in a managerial position with women and men working beneath her. These opportunities came to her right out of college. So on the one hand, you see this great transformative moment in the world of women's work. But at the same time, not everything has changed. She wasn't allowed to study what she wanted to. And in fact, you know, eventually learned that some of those men who were her subordinates were making more money than she was.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned you interviewed both men and women for the book, and you highlight a number of women. I think there's maybe nine or so. But there are also men you talk to. And one of the things the government was also interested in was assessing the risk of exposure to plutonium. And they injected one construction worker at this site without his knowledge following he had a car accident.
Yes, they did. Those files were found in the, I did not get to interview Mr. Cade. Those files were found in the National Archives, the Atomic Energy Commission holding. The plutonium testing and other radioactive testing on humans actually went on outside the Manhattan Project as well. And continued into, I think some of the last tests were in the 70s, and these were happened in various capacities, without one's knowledge, with only partial knowledge, and what was interesting to me was it was during, I believe, the 90s when they said, okay, all of these files are now going to be made completely available to anyone who wants to know anything about what has happened to them or one of their relatives. And in the end notes, I actually include you can go online and read just stunning transcripts about some of these procedures. Yeah,
it's terrible. So we had an integrated army, yet Oak Ridge was very much racially segregated.
Oak Ridge was segregated. It was, the housing was separate. There were limited jobs available to members of the Black community, basically construction, janitorial, and working in someone's home. Husbands and wives were not allowed to live together. Black families were not allowed to bring their children with them to the site. I was extremely, extremely fortunate to be able to spend so much time with Katie Strickland. She's one of the main women in my mm-hmm. book. And she came from Auburn, Alabama with her husband. They were not allowed to live together. They lived in an area that was, they were in Hutman, 16 foot by 16 foot structures that they shared with, you know, at least four other people. And, you know, when I talked to Katie, and it's challenging as a journalist when you are basically asking someone to relive in as much mm-hmm. detail as possible very difficult moments in their life. And I'm very grateful that Katie spoke with me to the extent that she did. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, the money that I was offered was more than twice what I was able to get back in Auburn. And mm-hmm. that was the reason that she went to Oak Ridge. And she and her husband left their children with Katie's mother, and they sent money back on a regular basis. So, and she just passed away within the last, I want to say it was last year, just shy of her 100th birthday. Wow. And still lived in Oak Ridge.
Yeah. What was the reaction when we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima?
It varied. What I tried to do in the book when I talked to people was to get them to think about how they felt on that day when they learned the news. Because what I found so fascinating about this community was that they really straddled two completely different worlds, a world without nuclear weapons and a world with them. And those are very different worlds. I don't even have to think about, you know, somebody said the bomb. I knew exactly what bomb they were talking about. And I had this whole catalog of images of mushroom clouds and you know, nuclear winter and all of this stuff. There was none of that sort of cultural backstory for any of these people. You know, the day of the bombing, as information started to come out, some people were running around talking about the automatic bomb. They weren't even used to the language yet. Mm-hmm. The extent of the damage became more evident actually as time passed. The first round of information was just that there was this brand new weapon that was extremely destructive, and, you know, it looked like the war might be over. And, you know, get to a radio, there's going to be an address from the president. And during that address, after, you know, this description of this new weapon and what had gone on in Hiroshima, they actually mentioned Oak Ridge. Mm. And people were just flabbergasted that you live with a secret for so long. They were still sort of processing the fact that it looked like the war might actually be over. And then they found out they had a part of it. And then suddenly, you know, press for a limited amount of time are running around town, you know, this town where you're not allowed to talk about anything. And, you know, for most people, it was a combination of feelings. One woman I interviewed, Marty, I remember her response very clearly, because she said, you know, when I learned about what had happened, I was so happy because I thought my brother was going to come home and I would get to see him again. She said that I was very, very sad because so many people died and, you know, we were a part of that and I like people. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was interesting that a lot of folks could really hold both of those feelings together. Yeah. Another man I spoke to said it was a time of horrors. We had seen so many horrors, and this was another horror that ended the other horrors. Mm. And I thought that was quite poignant as well.
Yeah. Some of the people who came to Oak Ridge for the war effort stayed after it ended. We had some romances that you might expect.
Yeah.
Talk about that, the people who stayed, and what Oak Ridge is like current day.
Well, one of the things that the military realized they had to do was they had to come up with some recreation programs for these folks. The average age in Oak Ridge during the war was like 27 or something, you know, mid to late 20s. And these people were working very long hours. They wanted them to stay. They didn't have to stay, but nobody wants a lot of turnover because that's not good for production. So they, you know, they came up with, you know, we're going to have dances, you know, almost every night of the week. We're going to have bowling leagues. We're going to have a theater. They had this extremely robust recreation program. Well, you know, you stick a bunch of 20-somethings behind a secure fence and send them to dances every other night, there's going to be some hooking up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people became quite connected to Oak Ridge. Not a lot of us can say we were the first residents ever of a town. And you know, I think the unanticipated result of creating Site X was community. And I don't think that was something that, you know, the military is just working toward a particular goal. I don't know that they anticipated that. So, yes, a lot of people did stay. You know, we came out of World War II and went into the Cold War. For a lot of these folks, the Depression was not a distant memory. So if they could hold on to a good paying job in Oak Ridge, they were absolutely going to do that because you did not walk away from a good paying job. And so, yeah, a lot of them did stay. The National Lab in Oak Ridge grew and has flourished. It's one of the largest, most active national labs in the United States. People come from all over the world to use the facilities there. The town itself is actually smaller population-wise. You know, like I said, at the height of World War II, the resident population was hovering near 80,000, and now it's closer to, I think it's just under 30,000. Mm-hmm. Our nation's supply of enriched uranium is still in Oak Ridge. So it's a very, it is still extremely active as far as nuclear research, which now includes things like nuclear medicine, and supercomputers, but the actual population has shrunk a little.
Yeah. Denise Kernan is the author of The Girls of Atomic City, The Untold Story of the Women Who Helped Win World War II. She's going to be delivering the annual Nickerson Lecture at 7 p.m. Saturday, October 14th at Brewster Baptist Church. That's right next to, adjacent to the Brewster Ladies Library. Denise, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.